This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Live here, Pet Life Radio, and Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff here on Instagram. And I'm here for you, here for you. Pets, any questions you have, now is the time to ask. As I was telling Mark, our producer at Pet Life Radio, back to reality. A great long weekend in Cabo San Lucas. It was great. I still have a little bit of a tan left. So anyway, I hope you all had a great week. I had a really good week. You know, anytime I go away, people think, well, that's great. You know, you had, because I missed Thursday and Friday the week before. I was back by Monday, so I had a full week, but it wasn't a full week. It was a full week plus 2 days because they had to make up for the Thursday and Friday. And I mean, it's amazing because people, which I love, I'm not complaining. I love the fact that when I'm not there, they're not going to go. They're just going to say, okay, we'll wait. So all of a sudden I get to work and I'm it was crazy, but good crazy. Because I love helping your pets, asking questions, answering questions. And that's why I'm here. So speaking of which, if you have anything you want to talk about, let me know. I had some really good surgeries. So I work with another veterinarian who is older and doesn't do the kind of surgeries that I do. So whenever he has something that's really tough, a really gnarly surgery, because Jeff, he's English. Jeff, can you come here and take a look at this one? So I say, okay. I take a look and I'm thinking, this is great. I'm going to love this one. So I posted this surgery. The dog, by the way, is doing great. 14-year-old dog, mammary cancer, never spayed. And we find a mass in her abdomen that was absolutely tremendous. And just able to dissect it out with difficulty, a little bit of stress. It's okay. Stress is good in surgery. You know why? Because when you're stressed, when you are super worried about something, what does that make you do? It makes you be extra careful, extra slow. And I have a young veterinarian working with me who is trying to get his working. He's graduated a foreign veterinary school. So he is working to get his U.S. license. And I mean, it was great for him to assist me because he got to see the importance of not hack and slash, of actually taking the time, looking at what you have in front of you, evaluating the blood supplies, evaluating the connections of these tissues that don't belong together, but are together. And how do you separate them? And this mass had the bladder, had the colon all there. And it was just absolutely great that we got it all out back to normal. And, you know, as great as it is, you know, you close them up and you're feeling great about it. What's even greater is when they come in a week later, 2 weeks later for suture removal, and you see a dog that was probably ending up going to be euthanized. So that's the joy. That's what makes it so much difference. Speaking of which, as you guys have questions, ask away, but I'm going to start talking about something and would love to hear your opinions because hey, my sister is there. And hello, Bethany. Oh, yeah, you like the pink? Good. Real make her pink. So anyway, you know, we're faced with this a lot as veterinarians and you as pet parents are going to be faced with this. And it's really tough. I'll preface this with like this. I've had many, many cases over the years. And when it comes to cancer, for example, and the first time a pet parent is faced with their pet having cancer, they want to go for it. Let's do it. Let's treat. And I do a lot of chemotherapy. I'm not a radiation therapist, so I can't do, that's another board certification and that's tough. But I do feel that a lot of times radiation therapy is a great way to go. So we're left with two things that I do. One is obviously surgery, debulking a mass, removing a mass, whatever you can do. And of course, what we call chemotherapy. That's pushing the drugs that people have been through chemo. So people will do this. And you understand one thing. In veterinary medicine, unlike human medicine, where it comes to chemo or radiation, they knock the crap out of you. I mean, the goal there is to destroy the cancer, try to kill it, try to stop it. That's the goal. In veterinary medicine, we have all animals that are only going to live 13 to 15, sometimes big dogs, giant dogs, 10 to 11, up to up to maybe luck. If you're lucky, you get a 20-year-old dog. I've personally never had one. I've taken care of one little Chihuahua that went to 21, but it's not the norm. So, you know, the lifespan is limited. So the goal in veterinary medicine is not to completely try to eradicate the tumor where you're stuck in a hospital room or a hospital bed, or you're totally knocks the crap out of you for weeks, months, sometimes a year while you're going through the therapy. It's let's try to stop the growth, see if we can stop it for a while, maybe even cure it for a while. It's not, there's very few cures when it comes to certain cancers. Some cancers, yeah, if it's a cancer that you can actually remove the whole cancer, and it doesn't have a high metastatic potential, meaning it doesn't have a high potential to spread, then yes, we can cure some cancers. No doubt about it. I've done this with spleens. I mean, yes. But after going through chemo and having the experience, and let's say they go a year. Let's go to a year and a half. But it's not always an easy year and a half. The goal is to make it as easy as possible, but it's not always, you know, happens that way. And it's expensive. Very expensive. Don't get me wrong. And it's not just the vet trying to make money. No, the drugs are really expensive. And I've had drugs that are prohibitive now. I mean, I have one called cyclosporine that used to come in as an injection or a pill. I prefer the injection. You come in once a week, once every other. With a pill, you got to get there every day. But the injection got so ridiculously expensive, it's cost prohibitive. So that's the key there. But here's my point. When it comes time for a second pet, could be years later, and now faced with cancer, I can't tell you how many pet parents say, nah, we've been through this before. I'm not doing it again. So that therein lies, you know, and I would love your opinions. I would love to chime in, really, is when is it enough? At what point we're battling a very, very sick dog. Another example, a very sad example, a magnificent Bengal cat came in, a five-year-old, was indoor only, and started seizing. And first lost balance in his hind legs, then started seizing, continued seizures. They went to an emergency. To make this a cliff note version, the cat never really, now, of course, when something happens like this acutely, from a veterinary perspective, what did this cat get a hold of? Five-year-old cats don't come up with just a brain tumor overnight, or a brain lesion overnight, or meningitis, or encephalitis. And it's usually a toxin, something they ate, or being bitten by something. This is an indoor-only cat, and there was nothing possible. There was nothing in the house that was a drug that could do this. And this progressed. The cat needed so much anti-seizure medication, it was a zombie. They kept wanting to go and do more. They didn't really have the money, but they really loved this cat, and the cat was a stunner. And long story short, after, about over a week of this cat hoping, we're doing tests. I had a colleague of mine who's an ultrasonographer came in and did a full abdomen scan, ultrasound scan. They did a CT scan. CT came up normal, but it wasn't really the best. We told them that an MRI would be better than CT for this thing, because I didn't think this was a physical thing like this. I thought it was more of an inflammatory soft tissue problem. And therefore, the MRI would be better. But the MRI was also way more expensive. So, I mean, it was like one of these instances, these situations where you really couldn't win. And that finally, we were trying something else. We were looking, going to do some other testing that could affect the brain, a disease, toxoplasmosis, tick-borne disease. There are so many things that could ultimately cause this. The pet died. And now you look back, and we talked to them about it. We said, this is not good. When you have to sink in and do all these diagnostics to try to get an answer, then very likely, once you even find out, it's going to be a tough treat. Meaning you couldn't even treat it, or it's going to be too expensive to treat something. It wasn't an easy case at all. But the sad thing is that they spent several thousand dollars on a cat that had a very poor prognosis. A cat that needed just to find out what it was, let alone treat it, just to find out what it was. At what point do we say enough is enough? At what point do we look at the big picture, try to remove our emotion, which is very hard for you to do. It's easier for me as a veterinarian to do, because I'm not emotionally attached to the pet. I've done that. I've been there, done that. And so much so with one of my greatest cats ever, Sushi. We had two Oriental Shorthairs, Sushi and Saki. Sushi was just, was getting very, very, very old. We couldn't figure out what it was. It was sort of an insidious, but not so slow onset. So we didn't think it was a disease. We think it was something. And we worked. And sometimes you have a good day. And when we finally came time to say goodbye, my son, Brandon, who runs AirVet, who's obviously an animal lover, he said, "Dad, we waited too long." Oh my God, that really came. He was right. Because when you're so emotionally attached, it is so difficult to say, we need to say goodbye. And I learned something from a colleague of mine, we've talked about this on the show, that you can never make a mistake by saying goodbye a little bit too early, but you can make a terrible mistake by waiting too long. And that's how I felt with Sushi. I think I waited too long. So, and I'm waving to you guys. So I want to see if we have some good questions here. For some reason, my scroll didn't move up by itself. All right, here's one. Morning. My dog is totally fine in himself, eating, drinking, bathroom normally. He had a cough and now his nose runs every time we go outside. Nose will not stop, but only when we go outside. Wow. So first of all, I'd like to know where you live. There, when you say runny nose, there are different types of runny nose. There's a runny nose where the discharge is clear, serous discharge. I'm hoping that's what you're talking about. That would make more sense. Then there's a runny nose where there is a discharge. It's either green, it's yellow, it's thick, it's whitish, like snot. That is usually due to some sort of respiratory infection or some impediment, something up in the nose, like a mass, like a polyp. And of course, then there's bleeding, a bloody discharge. That's even more so something serious, because that means it can be a tumor up the nose or a polyp up the nose, something like that. Now, if the nose is just running and it's a clear, serous discharge, it could be something outside, could be a pollen that he's reacting to, could be believe it or not, sometimes like people, they can, it's not like a cold. Dogs don't get colds per se, but if it is cold, then they might have a little runny nose. So the fact that it's every time outside and it will not stop, but only when we go outside. Now the nose runs every time. Here it says, the nose will not stop, but only when we go outside. That means it's going all the time. He had a cough. Now his nose runs every time we go outside. When you come back inside, does it stop? And so long, at what point does it stop? Does it take hours or does it take within a few minutes? So there's more. But if it's everything else is normal and it's not a, I don't have a phone call. If everything else is normal and I hope we're back on. Let me give me a thumbs up if we're back on. So if everything is normal, then and eating and drinking and et cetera, then I'm not that worried. So if appetite was depressed, if energy was depressed and it was happening and the discharge was colored or white or yellow or green, then that's definitely a reason to go see your vet and see what's going on, because that means it could be some sort of respiratory bug. Okay. Good morning. You helped me with Levi on the last night of the advice. Thank you. Yes, that is. Live in the Bay Area. So I wonder, I mean, it's a clear discharge. So yeah, again, if it's a clear discharge and you know, you can try, just try Benadryl. I would advise my client with a similar situation to give him a Benadryl at a basic dose, which is a milligram per pound. So if there are 25 milligram tabs, 25 milligram dog would get one tab and you can do it up to three times a day. I usually say twice a day. If it was more than that, one and a half, I mean, you can break it up, get close to whatever, a milligram per pound. By the time they're diagnosed, they must be feeling badly with the terminal diagnosis, which is, I agree. And that's where I get a lot. And I think that sometimes, and it's a great comment from Hardwick, I can't help but feel that by the time they're diagnosed, they must be feeling badly. With a terminal diagnosis, I would choose sooner than later. And that's how many of us feel too, because unfortunately, we see the devastation. We see what happens when you wait too long. But it's hard to convince a pet parent who's going through this for possibly the first time that might be the best solution. And, oftentimes, it's very interesting. I know that we are behind the eight ball. I know that this pet is not going to do well. But oftentimes, I can see that the owner, the pet parent, is not ready. Or what I don't want, and that's the worst feeling, is for them to say goodbye and then kick themselves in the butt. I wish I could have, would have. I wish I should have did this test. I wish I did that test. So a lot of times I'll tell somebody, you know what, I'll tell you what, why? Let's run this test, whether it's an x-ray, whether it's an ultrasound, whether it's a blood test, a urinalysis, whatever the case may be, depending on the disease at hand. Because I want you to see, I want you to know with confidence that when you make that tough decision, it was the right decision. So if you are going to need a little push, a little something to make it easier for you so you don't regret it down the road, that you don't say to yourself, oh, we should have done more. Let's do this. So if this test comes back with what I think it's going to, then you know we're bad. And I think that sometimes gives a little solace, a little help to the owners to know that, you know what, it's tough. Nick, it is. Thank you for sharing. I wish there was more material too. And this is, this is the beauty of what I do and what we as veterinarians do is try to make that transition for the pet parent a little easier because they have probably not been there, done that. They had not seen what a guy like I have seen who's been practicing for over 40 years. 40 years, you get a lot of experience in 40 years. And what is that? What is it? I always say, and this is, it's an easy one, but what's the difference between knowledge and wisdom? And the difference is experience. These are young veterinarians out there, probably way smarter than I am. I mean, big time, way smarter. And they have new knowledge and a lot of the stuff that I know is 40 years old. I mean, yes, I go to all the shows and the conferences and I keep up and I get, we have to do CE every year to maintain our veterinary licenses, but they're well equipped, but they don't have experience. And without experience, you just can't be wise. You can be smart, but not wise. And that's how I feel. And so those of us, sometimes it's better to be that person who has maybe more experience. All right, hold on. Love. I'm trying to wave with you all. If I miss a wave, don't take it personally. Try the Benadryl and let me know if that helps a little bit. And if it's also predictable that it's always happening when you're going outside, then go ahead and do it like maybe a little before the walk. That might be helpful. All right, Mark Thompson, hello. All right. Oh my God, I've been talking so much, I didn't realize it's time to break. No wonder why I'm getting dirty looks from Mark. So we're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to hear from you. I want some questions. And otherwise, I'm sure we'll talk about something. I'm never at a loss for words. All right, be back after these short messages. Don't go away.
You know the expression? Cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
So we're back here live on Pet Life Radio as well. It's a good question, and I want to thank I'm So Bossy. So, it's good morning, Dr. Jeff. I have a 10-year-old female cat. What are signs of dementia? She's been acting a bit weird, constantly meows. I have to constantly pet her and talk to her until she stops. Now, so at 10 years of age, I'm sort of going in two directions on this one. Because sometimes cats will meow for comfort because of some sort of pain, some ailment, some abnormality. And that's the one side. The other side is, yes, cats can get dementia. 10 might be a little bit young, but not impossible. So as a 10-year-old cat, anyway, even if the kitty was perfect and she was, everything was right. I still say she needs a full physical. For me, a cat eight years old would be the earliest, by 9 for sure, 10, absolutely. Meaning, get blood, get urine, get an x-ray, just to see if there's anything that's abnormal that might be the underlying cause of this behavior. If it is that, then you need to treat what the problem is. It could be a pain thing. Cats will meow. And when they stop because you're petting, it's because you're soothing. And they love that. Now, I have lots of cats. I have 4. And I have one that they meow when they want water. Now, mind you, I have a waterer, you know, the one that's going on 24/7, right? Then I have a water bowl that I have access to 24/7. But my one cat, good old Ninja, who's about 13, he likes to drink from the sink. So much so that I had to put like a rubber band on the handle so he can't open it himself, which he learned to do, and to help himself to his own water dripping from a faucet. But he never learned to turn it off. So I go in the kitchen where there's water pouring in the sink. I go, Ninja, really? So now I get to blame you for the water bill? You're going to contribute this much? So now he knows, but he sits there and he meows. I go, screw it. I find it here. Open. I just have a nice thin little drip. And he sticks his whole head under the water. So the water drips on the back of his face, dribbles down his face, right? It's hysterical. And then finally into his mouth. So now if everything comes out normal on the blood test and the urinalysis, the x-rays, I mean, had a good thorough physical and she's the perfect cat. She's eating well. Her poops are normal. Litter box behavior. Everything's good, 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 good. Then yeah, think about dementia. I don't see it as much in cats, but we do see it. I'd have to check this out. There is a medication we use in dogs and you can talk to your veterinarian about selegiline. And selegiline or L-deprenil that we use for dogs that is supposedly good. I love leap years for dogs, by the way. And leap years is a supplement that sharpens up the brain, it stimulates the production of NAD in the body. I love it so much. When I was doing research on it, they wanted me to do a post for them. And I love the product and I recommend it. And I started reading up on it. I said, well, this sounds really good. I wonder if this is something that can help a guy like me. And I started reading up on NAD. And sure enough, I now take an NAD supplement, which is great. I can't tell. I mean, I've been doing it for about, I don't know, maybe 6 months, 8 months. I can't tell you for sure it's helped. I do remember to take it every day. That's a plus. At least I remember something. But anyway, you can look into those things for cats. I'm sure you find a lot of good stuff online on you know, just pet behavior, but cat behavior. But it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't be surprising if there is dementia in cats. Of course there is. Yeah, it would surprise me if there was nothing out there that could help. So I'm sure, but look up selegiline, S-E-L-E-G-I-N-E. Selegiline is used for people. We use it for dogs. And I can't imagine why it shouldn't help in cats too. I'm coming looking at JB. How are you? I missed you. What do you recommend for Cushing's disease in a dog? That's a great question. That's right up my alley. Okay. So Cushing's is a disease where the adrenal glands are either over-secreting on their own, or that's actually truly Cushing's disease. Then there's Cushing's syndrome, which the brain is interesting. The brain is secreting an adrenocorticotropic hormone that is stimulating the adrenals to fire. So one is pituitary based, that's brain related, and one is the actual adrenal gland itself. And so the old drug that we used to use is called Lysadrin or OPDDD. And that is one that would destroy the adrenal and then sort of, then we would supplement. We'd have to supplement. And it was good. It would slow down the secretion of the, and it would sort of negate the hormone. And it was pretty dangerous. And what some, in fact, in Sweden, what they used to do was overdose with the OPDDD, the lysodrim, destroy the adrenal gland, and then treat them for Addison's disease, which is an easier treat. So we didn't do that. Now there is another medication that it's called Veteril Trilistane, and it's a once a day, and that is, I would think, by from what I know, which isn't a ton, it's a lot, not a ton, and is still now the accepted treatment. And I only say this because when I work with specialists or I see cases that have came in that were diagnosed from a specialist and they're looking for a new general practitioner, I see that even the specialists are still using trilistane. It's called Veteril. What you have to do, though, is you first do that. First of all, let's talk about diagnosing. The best diagnostic test for Cushing's, in my opinion, is called a low-dose dexamethasone suppression test. It's called the LDDS. So we do a low-dose dex suppression test. And what it does, we're doing a very small amount of steroid where we're injecting into the body based on weight. So it's an exact amount. Because we know that the body has a great feedback mechanism and it will not secrete its own steroid in the face of steroid that's already there. So that's how we make a diagnosis. Dogs with Cushing's, whoever say, to heck with that steroid that's already there, I'm going to secrete anyway. So that's why they call it a low-dose dex suppression test. So when you give the low-dose dex, and then we take a test 4 hours later and 8 hours later. So it's a full-day test. The dog's got to stay in for a full day. And then at the end, they measure the four-hour volume and the eight-hour volume. And does it drop appropriately for a normal dog because you gave them steroid in the morning? It should. A normal dog will drop. So their own cortisol levels will definitely decrease. But dogs with Cushing's, it doesn't. So there's your diagnosis. Is it 100%? No. There's no test like this that's 100%. Even the next one is called ACTH response test. You actually give the dog ACTH, that same hormone coming from the pituitary gland. If, in fact, it is a high, the dog has Cushing's, all right, it's going to secrete even more than your normal dog. But here are the problems. If it is an adrenal mass, you definitely want to get an abdominal ultrasound ideally because the treatment there might be just removing the adrenals. So it's good to know whether it's true Cushing's disease or it's actually Cushing's syndrome. If it's pituitary, the Veteril is 100% the way to go. If it is a Cushing's disease, actually the problem is the adrenal gland, and you go to the ultrasound and you see a huge adrenal gland, this dog might be a surgical candidate. And then, or a radiation candidate. So you need to kind of coordinate with an intern, a veterinary internist, possibly an oncologist, or a veterinary surgeon. Because if it is, will Veteril still work both ways? It usually does. So I'm a Veteril guy. I push the Veteril, but there may be other options if you could differentiate between a pituitary dependent or a non-pituitary dependent. If it's truly coming from the adrenal gland, you have some other more drastic options, but they could also be curative. So you got to keep that in mind. Okay. Oh, and let's talk about it. How do you think your dog is Cushing's, right? So that's important to know. Here we're talking about a disease and you're going to say, what is that? Okay. So the typical symptom of a dog with Cushing's disease, why? Because they're secreting too much steroid. It's as if you're giving a dog too much prednisone. So what do dogs do? What do people do on steroids? First of all, they eat because it increases their appetite, and they drink and pee like crazy. So the what's coming in is an animal that is drinking and peeing like crazy, and you test the blood and you see what's some other conditions that will cause drinking and peeing like crazy. Diabetes. Both diabetes mellitus, which is the sugar diabetes, and diabetes insipidus, which is water diabetes. So you got two there, then you got Cushing's disease, and then you got your kidney problems. So it's not a slam dunk by any means. When you have a dog who presents with PUPD, a full physical's got to be done. We got to rule these things out. Now, there is a blood test or a value. It's a liver value on the blood panel coming from the liver, called alkaline phosphatase, but also comes from muscle, comes from GI, but alkaline phosphatase in cases of Cushing's is skyrocketed. And when, so you, when you have a PUPD and you, you know, excessive drinking, excessive peeing, and you see, you do your blood tests, kidneys look normal, BUN, creatinine, totally normal, right? The kidney values are normal. So you have the sugar, glucose, totally normal. No glucose in the urine either, totally normal. But you got an alkaline phosphatase of 2000, that's Cushing's. So now that's not diagnostic, because there's also something called vacuolar hepatopathy, which can cause the same symptoms and not as dramatic. And it's just, you know, you have a dog that's fairly normal, actually, with a super high alkaline phosphatase. So you got to be careful there, too. But now when you see that, that's a screener. You have the symptoms, you have high alkaline phosphatase, you have normal other values that might cause PUPD, urinating and drinking. So now we do the ACTH response. Now we do the LDDS, the low dose dex suppression test. And then to really differentiate, you can do a high dose dex suppression test, because dogs with pituitary will finally suppress with high dose of steroids, but dogs with adrenal will not. So yeah, you have a couple of options there. Anyway, boy, this was fun. I hope I answered all your questions. Dog is a pups and it's dog had pup. Oh, extremely. If a dog had puppies and is extremely thirsty and hungry, it's very normal. You realize that a pregnant mom needs 1.5 to 1.75 times her normal caloric intake. A nursing mom needs twice as much. So if you were feeding your dog 2 cups, now she's nursing, she needs 4 cups. If you were giving her, you know, 2, 1.5 cups of water, she needs 3 cups of water. Because remember, in these nursing pups, they are taking a lot out of mom. So that is very, very normal. And yes, make sure that she gets plenty, plenty of water and she gets plenty of food, because she needs it. She needs that energy to take care of those puppies. Good, good. I'm just going through old ones because I want to make sure I didn't miss anybody. And I think we are good. Okay, so that's it, everybody. I always go over, but what can I do? If you have any questions during the week, you can reach me here on Instagram, Werbs_DBM. If you have any friends that might learn and benefit from this show on Sunday mornings, have them come be my Instagram friend. Follow me on Instagram, Werbs_DBM. And they can also have access to me without the show, just during the week. I love answering questions from any of you. So that would be something I would recommend. And for those of you on Pet Life Radio, you know how to get hold of me, drjeff@petliferadio.com. And Mark, everything gets forwarded to me. And there you have it. So Instagram, Pet Life Radio, both very easy. And of course, as always, I would imagine a lot of you have my phone number, because I give it out when you need to get a hold of me. So I'm not one of those docs that says, no, you can never bother me, anyone. I leave the office. I'm the doc. I think I told you this. I'm the doc. Now, when I'm sitting in a plane and someone says, what do? I say, I'm a veterinarian. My really good friend, Marty Becker, who, when he travels a lot, he's on a lot of planes, he says, people ask what he does, he says, I'm a proctologist. Who wants to ask a guy about their butt bumps? But when it comes to a veterinarian, oh my God, they're loaded with questions. And I love it. All right. See you next week, everybody. Have a great week. And save up those questions. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.